to a brand new episode of Sincerely Jennifer with me, Jennifer Wan. Hello, hi. It's a new episode of Sincerely Jennifer with me, Jennifer Wan, and I'm very tired because I did not arrive home until about 2 a.m. this morning because I had a wild time, but it was fabulous. Hello. We're gonna be talking some poetry today because that is literally what the show is about. And talking about all the themes and all the things. So strap in. This is gonna get fabulous. There is a moon, making sure I get home safe, but I suspect that safe is the last thing I'll ever be again. I am at the risk of a dangerous kind of devotion, the kind where I'm defined by how I looked in your arms this evening. You told me in a whisper full of wanting that I was your lover, the kind of girl that could be contained by no other, something explosive, neutralized by your possessive kiss as you push me from the dance floor into the shadows where nobody can touch or take a look at your treasure. Being in love with you is a bind that I hope to always find myself in. I am so beautiful when I'm by your side, like something rare and real important. So I follow you everywhere, like a puppy or a bad penny, sticking to you like the stars stick to clear skies. Your lover, and nothing else, if that's what you need. It's dreadfully unhealthy, but darling, I told you this devotion is dangerous. I know that you get jealous of every little thing. The air that surrounds me as I exist, and the places that I go as I dream, the ink that stares up silently from my stories. So if you ask me nicely, with your arms around me as they were a moment ago, maybe I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. I am at large on the Dartford Loop Line, like a lark singing La Vie en Rose to myself, as you rise from the safety and sanity of our sheets, possessed by the power of excitement, anticipating what will occur when I am home. And when the door closes, my keys will clatter in the bowl and I will be your lover. I will be nothing else but whatever your heart desires, and that will be enough. Perhaps the door will open again someday, and the keys will be lifted from their place and paraded somewhere new for the day. But no matter where I go, I will be your lover. And you tell me, as I round the corner, that I am so close to home that you can almost taste me. And you, starving in the best way, can't stand it anymore. That's pretty good for something that I wrote while drunk on a train, I feel. oh, God. So I, yesterday, Saturday, I got out of the time of my life. I went to a Kaylee. I'd never been to one before. It was baby's first Kaylee. Mm-hmm. And she had a lovely time. I won something in the raffle. I did. I won more alcohol, which was perhaps the last thing that I needed. But I'm still very thrilled about that. And I had an amazing time. I actually got up and I did some dancing. I thought to myself, when I arrived, I thought, no, that is not a thing I'm going to do. I will just sit here, drink a lot and look very, very pretty, because I'm not going to lie, I did. I did look very nice. I went all out. I wore a petticoat and everything. I was, like, I can't lie to you, I was kind of serving it. I just kind of was. Sometimes that just happens. Sometimes a girl just looks very, very beautiful. I was sort of resigned, you know. My job is to just sit here, look pretty and be fabulous. Peer pressure though. Peer fucking pressure. Everyone was like, oh, go on, go and dance. And I'm like, yeah, maybe I will. Eventually I did. I was dragged up there and I had so much fun though. I mean, look, I may have got a little bit muddled with some of the steps every now and again, but I feel like I managed to put it together. I was looking good. I was feeling good. I was, in my mind, Jacqueline McCaffrey in that one sketch, you know, the one. I was her. I was serving it. I was looking good. I was feeling good. Tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be a fucking princess. It was very that. And I was, when I was on the train home, and I was just thinking, I have just had such a wonderful, wonderful evening. I really have. I've had a lovely time. I've had fun. Got to do a lot of dancing. Got to have some drinks. Got to spend time with some wonderful, wonderful people. Won a prize. That was a moment. That was cute. Feeling good. Feeling fabulous. And I kind of had this idea, because I remember having this one thought as I was watching one of the dancers that I did not join in for, and I was watching and I thought, oh my god, I feel like I want stuff like this at my wedding. Like, that would be cute. It would be nice, and it would be better, because, like, honestly, there are some things in weddings that, frankly, I find a little vulgar. There are, like, some, like, songs that they always play at, you know, English weddings, for example, that I hate. You see, my wedding, right, I've been planning this since forever. My wedding is going to be very, like, culturally, like, a mashup. Like, there are going to be some, you know, I think there are going to be some English things I take forward, some Spanish things. I've been dreaming of a black dress my whole life, and a black veil. That's what I want. I think it's so much more romantic than you know, the white dress and the misogyny that springs from that, you know. Oh, she's wearing white because she's a virgin and she's got to prove it and she can bleed on it. No. No, I don't think. But I looked at that and I thought, ooh, let me pick that up and just place that in my wedding too. We're going to do that now. Instead of, because, like, let me tell you, English weddings, they always, I have been to a number of English weddings. And one of the things that is, like, a key feature is you'll have, like, a DJ who has, like, a group of songs that he's going to put on at all times. For some reason, what I've noticed, wedding DJs, always men. Don't know why that is. Perhaps we can talk about, I don't know if there's some kind of oppressive misogyny that keeps women out of these jobs, but frankly, I don't know. I feel like maybe women are too good for it. But anyways, but they always play, they always play the Macarena. I fucking hate that song. I hate that song for personal reasons that I will not go into, but I hate it. I don't want to talk about it. Don't want it played at my wedding. That's out. Mm-mm, no, we don't like her. She's vulgar. They always play, what's that song? It was in, Maureen and David did it in Psychoville. I don't know the name of it, but it's a song about like Superman or some shit, and they always play that. You know, just like kind of camp weird songs, and I don't like them. I don't, because everyone's expected to get up and do a really shit dance, and I don't want that. I don't want that. If everyone's gonna be expected to get up and dance, I want it to at least look pretty, which is why I looked at what I was seeing last night and I thought, maybe something like that. Nice. Anyways, so there I am thinking about my wedding, and then I'm like, let's think about who we're gonna be marrying. And then of course I drift into my little dream world and I think about my fantasy wife, and you know, it is Pride Month, and maybe my Pride-mas wish will come true and she will just wander into my life and we will go to an event like this and we will dance together and it'll be very beautiful and she'll kiss me and it'll be fabulous. And I just kind of got lost in thinking about it, and then I just started writing, you know, on the train. It was about 1:30 in the morning. And I'm just typing away on my phone, furiously, thinking about it, thinking about love, thinking about the future, thinking about forever. And it was fabulous. It was fabulous, it really was. It was a lovely, way to end a fabulous day, because, you know, for me, writing is something that makes me incredibly happy. And so I really enjoyed just writing that in the early hours of the morning, having a wonderful time. It was 4 a.m. and I found the thought of you, dusty and damaged at the back of my mind, brushing it off as I placed it on the bedside table beside my favourite framed photograph of my mother. At last, the band is back together, and at 4 a.m, for the first time in months, I am thinking about you. I'm really thinking about you. It's not a passing moment or a stream of swear words while I'm under the influence. It is a real, lasting, languishing thought. You grow tall, towering over my mother in the frame, spilling off the table, a shadowed phantom, and my head is full of smashed bottles and shouting. I have put my life in your hands too many times, because up until recently, my life didn't mean much to me. But now I'm grown. I'm not a girl. I haven't been one for years. I am a goddess. I glide across the golden sky, and I know that it terrifies you as you stare up from hell and see what I have become. I used to daydream about fantastical shows of regret. The Tower of Leaning Father, stumbling over his machismo, making good with the charred child at last. The tossed whiskey glass returning to his scorching hand from the wall that it slid down. An understanding smile instead of banishment, and the grace to just accept the child that God gave you. The thought returns to being just a thought. It grows small again, taking you with it. And in an instant, you are a small speck of dust on the bedside table. I used to think that my greatest achievement would be your acceptance, that my crown jewel would be an apology for the man who drank himself to death, disturbed by the notion that his sweet little daughter was seduced by a siren of sin. And tonight I thought about it. And I thought about you. I really thought about you. And I noticed that my head has always been held like a queen should be. Pressure and stress are their own tiaras, and I have been coronated. I have lived a long life, and I have reigned in a way that leaves me satisfied. I write love songs to the people, to the roses and the poppies that are summoned by spring. And every Sunday, I read stories to the starlit skies. And you, you are a small speck of dust on the bedside table, bawling into a shot glass about how shocking and upsetting it is to discover the truth about your daughter. You are a small speck of dust on the bedside table. You do not get to rise from the dead, but I have never stopped gliding through the golden sky because I am a goddess. I know that you're supposed to be respectful of people that are no longer here and shit, but if they're related to you and also did a lot of damage when they were alive, I feel like maybe you can overlook that. And actually also, like, even if they're not related to you, because, like, I hate Margaret Thatcher and I will talk shit about that woman at every opportunity. And I'm not gonna stop just because she's dead. I was just kind of thinking about, you know, what a disappointing human being my father was. Is it wrong for me to say that? No, I don't feel that that is true. He would say the same about me, that's the thing. Except he can't. Except through a Ouija board. But for real, he would say the same about me. He would be very disappointed that I am not what he would have wanted, you know. But that's not his fucking business. Because here's the thing. You do not owe an ideal child to your parents. Because you did not ask to be born. They made a choice to be your parents. The responsibility is on them to love you, essentially. And if they don't want to do that, you don't have to love them back. I love my mother with every single part of my heart and soul, because my mother is, she's kind and she's intelligent and she taught me so much and she took care of me, and even as an adult, you know, she has never stopped caring about me and loving me. And she accepts me. She loves me, you know. And I love her. Because she's never given me a reason not to. But I don't think I have an obligation to keep loving a man that could not accept me as his child. I didn't ask to be here, you know. I did not ask to be here. I am here because of something he did. And I don't feel obligated to love him because of that. You know? I feel like love has to be earned. Like, that is how I feel, you know. For all kinds of love, you have to earn it. And I don't think that he's really done enough. In fact, I feel like he's done the opposite. That's where I am at the moment. And it's complicated because it's been like a long roller coaster through my life of how I feel. And I spent a lot of time loving him and getting nothing in return. And I spent a lot of time making excuses for him, apologies for him, and getting nothing in return. And what was my crime What was my crime? Going to him as a young adult and being honest, you know, going to him and saying, I'm different. You know, sorry. And his anger, his disgust, his entitlement, really, that he felt that he had a right to have a heterosexual child. You know, was a huge part in where I find myself now, trying, you know, having spent years trying to be that, because he felt it was owed to him and I felt I owed it to him too. But meanwhile, we have this whole other parental figure, a woman who says, I love you, and that's it. If you are married to a man, if you are married to a woman, I love you. If you move to an all-women commune in the fucking Amazon and you spend your days reciting slam poetry about vaginas, I love you. I mean, that would never happen. I would willingly go to the Amazon, but I would not. I don't do slam poetry. It's not my thing. So my mother knows my genre. But still, I'm just using examples here. You know, if you, marry a woman and you adopt some kids, those kids are going to be my grandbabies, and I'm going to love you, and I'm going to love them, and I'm going to love her. I love you because you are my daughter. And it's easy for her, because her love is real and it's unconditional. It's not transactional in the sense that I have to pretend to be something I'm not to retain it. You know, I don't have to pretend that I am that I am something different. I don't have to force myself to try and live a different life for her to keep loving me, because she's parenting correctly, you know. I just, Christ. Anyway, I hope that he is having a lovely pride down in hell with Margaret Thatcher, and that they are looking up and watching a supremely gay world unfolding before their horrified eyes. No, it doesn't matter what my name is. You wouldn't be able to spell it anyway. So there's no use in me telling you. There's just some things I need to tell. Some things that are scorching my soul. And I'm starting to wonder if beneath my skin lies a madness. Some kind of sickness that I don't know how to fix. I looked at all the pills in the medicine cabinet and none of them seemed to fit my fixation. None of them promised a solution for my condition, and I'm all out of position, and gravity is a fairy tale, and I'm 11 now, so I'm getting old. I put my glasses on. I take them off. Nothing changes. The world is exactly how I've always seen it. And his face is how I can't help but see it. And I think there's something wrong with it. Maybe there's something wrong with me. But I've got to revise for my SATs, so I don't have the spare time to fix whatever the fuck this is. I have the body of a budding woman, but the face of a beautiful baby, and all she ever does is cry. All I can think to do is cry, because there's change on the horizon, and in the back of my mind, where I hope people can't see it, and I just hope that I'll spontaneously die before I have to deal with it. I'm beginning to understand why my mother worries. Why can't I see what all the other girls can see? I try the glasses thing again, and I'm galled by how nothing changes. Why can't I see what all the other girls see? Why can't he have soft, rose-tinted lips? That sweet shine on his skin that sends my soul screaming. His face is angular and alarming, and it's stony in such a way that I am petrified, missing my Medusa as I meet loneliness under the full moon. I don't believe in her. She is a ghost story. She is an urban myth. She is the kind of thing that will unravel me as the days dance by. I am starting to see that she has many soft, sweet faces with rose-tinted lips. So all I do is run, hoping that she cannot catch up to me. I am 11 and I can't be in love. But I'm lost in this confusing lust. I love it. I long for it, yearning and hounded by my hunger for it, and yet begging for the burning of my desire to drown in the mercy of cold, cruel showers. The possibility of falling in love is overwhelming, and I'm overloaded with the most mundane of fantasies. I want to go to a drive-in movie and be met with the kind of monster that will steal me away to this faraway island, the kind of place where nobody can survive, so that nobody can see me when I'm alone and attacked by my attraction to the 50-foot woman. What am I gonna do? So that is one of the poems from a little mini collection called Confession Hotline that is coming out tomorrow, actually. Well, it'll be tomorrow if you're listening to this on Sunday, but if you listen to this after Sunday, then it's probably already out on the website. And there will be an audio version coming next week as well. So, yeah. So it's a collection of poems from the perspective of a girl who is calling this secret hotline to confess all of these things that she's feeling as she grows up, discovering that she's different, you know. It may or may not be based on true events from the life of someone that you know and love. At least I hope you love me, because I love you, and it'd be really rude if you didn't love me back. I'm kidding. But yes, it's kind of based on my own life and my own experiences, because you know, growing up, I had a lot of confusion. I didn't have a secret hotline I could call to talk through my thoughts. I just cried a lot and and wrote angsty things. But I just kind of had this idea of, like, what if there was this, like, secret hotline that she could call and talk through what's going on. And because at the time, you know, I mean, I obviously I cannot speak for, you know, young people today and what they're thinking and feeling. But and I'm not saying that it's any easier. But what I would say is that at the very least, you know, young people today, as they're growing up, and you know, you kind of, you know, around kind of secondary school time is sort of the time when you're going to start realizing, you know, who you're attracted to, how you feel in your body, all that kind of stuff. And there's a whole lot of changes, and it's confusing as fuck, and it's so weird. But now, you know, in the media, there are, you know, examples of, you know, for example, you know, there's a show Heartstopper on Netflix. It's really popular. I think it was based on some books as well. And it's a show about, you know, these teenagers in school. You know, there's gay characters, lesbian characters, trans characters. So kids who are feeling, you know, in themselves, they feel different and they're not quite sure. They don't understand why. They can see stuff like that and they can be like, oh, okay, maybe this has something to do with me. Maybe this is who I am. And, you know, in some cases that may not be the case at all, but for the kids that are, they're going to see it and they're going to recognize themselves and they're going to understand a lot quicker than kids from the past would have. You know, there's, you know, LGBT characters in a lot of, you know, a lot of mainstream media these days. There are songs on the radio about being LGBT. There are songs from LGBT artists that are being, you know, played everywhere. And I'm happy for those kids because, you know, it's going to make their lives easier, really. But I didn't have that when I was a kid. You know, I just didn't. And, you know, on top of that, and I wrote a, I don't know what I'd call it, like a furious blog post, maybe. because the first ever Pride is happening in the town I live. For some reason, the council is pushing that and saying, oh, it's our first ever Pride, as if that's not embarrassing, in 2022 to only just be getting round to it. But okay. But I think they're really filling themselves because they booked River Medway and Bag of Chips. And also Gareth Gates, which, okay. no, I mean, I like Gareth Gates. He's cool. But still, it's like, okay. I mean, cool, but why is he here? Like, okay, cool. Anywho, so they're doing that. And I wrote about how, you know, obviously the local council are involved in this, but there is still the shadow of the homophobic actions of Dartford Borough Council, as well as surrounding councils and the Kent County Council as a whole, that haven't ever really been addressed. And so I wrote a little thing about that earlier this week. I'll put a link to it in the description or something if I remember. But if I don't remember, you can just find it on the website. It's only a couple of days ago, so it won't be hard to find. And so, you know, growing up, obviously, I didn't have, you know, kind of that representation in media, in books, in any of that. And, you know, in terms of school, obviously, we didn't have, you know, the inclusive sex education that kids have now, for example. We were, in fact, given incredibly exclusive sex education because of local government's insistence on banning the promotion of homosexuality. We were taught that it was abnormal and that heterosexuality was the only normal thing. So when you are in that situation and you find yourself looking around and being like, oh shit, oh no, oh no, the cursed thing, where, oh no, oh no, not me, not this, it's confusing and it's kind of terrifying. It really, really is. So that's kind of the starting point of the collection, and it goes through you know, various different phases and situations throughout the early part, up until kind of what led to sort of my decision, I guess you could call it, to just repress forever. Which, I mean, I know eventually I didn't end up doing that, and that's fabulous, but, you know, I feel like it's also important to chronicle the part of my life where I did, even though it is painful and I don't really like thinking about it these days, because it was a time of great sadness for me. I mean, that's the thing, actually. I was thinking about this the other day. I mean, my life is not perfect by any means, but I'm way less depressed than I used to be. You know, I mean, I think carrying secrets and pain with you for years and years and years, it fucks with you. And I'm a lot happier now that I'm just who I actually am. I'm not trying really hard to do something else, you know. I haven't been, you know, I mean, do I still get sad sometimes? Sure, but like, that's just life. But it's not the way it used to be. I used to have like days, sometimes like a cycle of days, sometimes even weeks, when I was just completely despondent. Like I just crying every night, just crying myself to sleep every single night. You know, and obviously that kind of reflected in my work, because, you know, if I'm writing every day, sometimes, you know, depressing shit's gonna come out. You know, suicidal ideations, like, all the fucking time. I just did not want to be here, because it was such a hard existence. I didn't want it, you know. And I, like I said, I'm not saying I have no problems now and I don't get sad, because of course I do, that's just life. But it's not like that anymore. It's not like that anymore, because the thing that was causing that is gone, you know. And I'm not saying that, you know, if anyone is listening to this and is in that position that I was in, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, turning that corner and opening up and all that is going to solve all of your problems, because, I mean, it may not, but it's certainly going to help alleviate things. Or it did for me anyway. I'm not a medical professional and I can't give you medical advice, but I'm just, you know, I'm just saying from my own experience, when I stopped trying to be something else, I got happier, you know. Obviously there is still some kind of residual guilt about a number of things, you know. I feel, you know, guilt sometimes about how I feel still, because, you know, obviously if you spend years being so deep in a cyclone of self-hatred, that just kind of happens. And maybe that goes away at some point. I don't know. I hope so, but, you know, it's getting less and less as time goes by, so it's whatever. There are some people that I feel some guilt about, you know, because obviously we had relationships, and obviously I had an ulterior motive for being there. I wasn't just there because, you know, I wasn't there because I was in love in the way that they were. I was there because I needed a place to hide. And I feel guilt about that. Not with everybody though, actually, because there are some people, like, as time went by, I started picking people that I wouldn't feel bad about anymore, because I was like, look, I have enough problems, I don't need to feel bad on top of it. But in some of the earlier cases, obviously, I do feel bad, because they felt how they felt, and they deserve to have that reflected on them too. And I feel bad about that sometimes. A lot of times, actually. I think I'm very lucky in that I did not, you know, like, for example, get married, have kids, with people like that, and then sort of tear their whole world apart by being like, I'm sorry, I can't do this. Because that, I don't know that I could. If that had happened, I probably would have just stayed forever, I think. And then that's even worse in a way, because it's sentencing them to a whole life with someone who can't return the love that they deserve, which I think is maybe worse, but I don't know. And I'm lucky to have not been in that position. You know, and so I'm, you know, thinking about those things a lot, but it's not anywhere near as bad as before, when I would just have these almost constant cycles of horrific sadness all the time. You know, and it kind of eased up, which is good, you know. But of course, this all could have been avoided. You know, I could have been just a normal person, living a normal life, feeling normal things, just doing what I want to do. Nobody is hurt, nobody is sad. But that was not what life wanted for me, I guess. I don't know. And in a way, that is its own pain, and in a way, I'm still kind of grieving that, because, you know, I think all I want is just to be a normal person. I think that's what everybody wants, really. Nobody wants to be hurt, nobody wants to be damaged, but I am, and I'm still figuring it out. It is what it is. Okay, loves, that's all for this week. There won't be like a proper episode of this show next week, because we are having an episode of Diverse Verse, so we'll be having that instead. But then after that, we'll be back with a normal episode the week after. So if you like this show, you may actually like Diverse Verse as well, because it is basically this show, but like with friends and music. So but I will be back again with another normal show the week after, and until then, love you, bye. Thank you for listening to Sincerely Jennifer with me, Jennifer Wan. If you want to find more of my work, you can on my website, jenniferwan.com, or you can find me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Reddit, SoundCloud, and pretty much every social media website ever, with the username Miss J Squared. Thank you to my amazing top tier patron supporters, Amanda, Kylie, Melissa, Anna, Sam, Casey, Christina, Josie, Gabriella, David, Elena, Alicia, Emily, Andy, and Tyler. I'll see you next time.